are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. I'm your host, Brian Peacock, formerly of Pro Football Focus, RotoWire, KNBR, currently a radio sports and traffic reporter in the Bay Area, and this is Locked On 49ers, your daily podcast of the San Francisco 49ers. Got a great show for you today. One of my favorite guests, Matt Barrows, 49ers beat writer for The Athletic. We're going to cover everything going on in the 49ers offseason right now, what the moves that they made in free agency mean for the draft, and how some of these players, especially Dee Ford, how he might be utilized. We heard a lot about the new wide nine and new defensive line coach Chris Kocurek and how things might look different up front. So we'll talk to Matt and see if we can figure out how these things all fit in and if it's even set yet, because maybe the draft will have something to say about that. Follow me on Twitter at BD Peacock if you want to be a sponsor of the show. Email lockedon49ers@gmail.com. You can get Locked On 49ers on the brand new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and when you're in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On 49ers. And now, let's get to today's guest. Always a pleasure to talk to my next guest. He is the 49ers beat writer for The Athletic, and if I'm not mistaken, he once dunked on NFL superstar Daryl Green in his front driveway. That is Matt Barrows. Matt, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me on. No, I didn't dunk on Daryl, but I did once throw him a pass that hit him in the face, like square, square in the face, like right before a big game. And I thought that I had just, like, you know, torpedoed the Redskins' chances in the playoffs or something like that.
Oh, no. So this is like a 12-year-old Matt Barrows and a 20.
Oh, I think even younger than that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, maybe 9 or 10.
Okay.
And this is the winter, and my driveway was flat, and so it would be puddles, and they would freeze. And I remember Daryl Green once came over and was shooting hoops. This is, I'm not making this up, this is in the middle of a playoff run. It might have been like 1985 or something like that. And Daryl Green, like, slips, and doesn't just slip, just like slips and like head over heel slips and like falls square on his back, like playing hoops. And I remember my dad saying, you know, if that had been worse, we would have had to have moved, because we would have been, like, you know, blamed as the family that hurt Daryl Green right before the big playoff game. And he's probably right. If that ever got out where that happened, we would have been vilified.
I only know one person who was a lifelong Washington Redskins fan, and they're a different breed. He was a little bit of an oddball when it came to his fandom, so I could see how they could get pretty aggro about something like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was crazy there for like a good decade or so. The Hogs. The Smurfs. I mean, people wore hog noses to school at my elementary school. Hog t-shirts were all the rage. If you didn't have your Washington Redskins Hogs t-shirt, you weren't cool. And that was a big moment in my life when I finally got my Hogs t-shirt, the Hogs. Yeah.
Yes, I remember those. I remember the Hogs t-shirts in the, like, the cartoonish late 80s, early 90s shirts that had all the teams. I think I had a San Francisco Giants one with, like, Will Clark and Candy Maldonado on it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they're very, lots of graphics on the t-shirt. But they ran out so quickly in the Washington, D.C. area that you had to go really far afield to find it. So you're like driving into Central Virginia, and you're like, yeah, I found a Sears in Culpeper, Virginia that sells them. I bought 20. And you sell them for, you know, 100% over the asking price.
That's awesome. I was reminded of that story on yesterday's show. A listener wrote in for a mailbag segment talking about how he had grown up in the same neighborhood as DeForest Buckner and was hoping that he had would get a long-term extension with the 49ers. And it made me think of that story about you and Daryl Green. But what about DeForest Buckner? Any word on an extension for him?
No, it's been crickets on that. And I don't think that DeForest Buckner or his agent want to do it this year. I think that's something that they want to wait on. I'm sure the 49ers would like to get it done and out of the way and sort of accounted for. So, you know, for accounting purposes and their salary cap. But, you know, I've been told that with at this stage in his contract, when he's really got two more years left, the last year of his rookie deal and then the fifth-year option, it's really difficult to do from the agent's perspective, because there are going to be so many other deals that are done between now and then that it might not look that great in a couple of years. So, you know, deadlines are always the best point as far as leverage to do it. So I guess that's why they would wait until probably this time next year to do it.
So what you're saying is there's a chance that 49ers fans are going to have to go through what a lot of teams fans have had to go through when their star player came close to free agency, which is potentially even, you know, you got the fifth year option and then you've got a franchise tag and then you've got a holdout. Could it go that long?
Well, I mean, it certainly could. Everybody hopes that it won't. And the 49ers seem to be allocating the necessary space to accommodate that. But yeah, I mean, that's what you try to do. If you're the guy who's representing DeForest Buckner, you're trying to squeeze the best deal you possibly can out of this team, and deadlines and franchise tags. And, you know, it's often based on what the franchise tag is. It's usually based on what the highest paid player at the position gets. And that may go up next year. So you'd be basing it off of what the going 2020 rate is instead of the 2019 rate.
So the 49ers did add a player next to DeForest Buckner in D. Ford, which is an important addition, and obviously the 49ers needed an edge presence, and they got their guy in D. Ford, trading that second-round pick in 2020 and then giving him a nice little contract to go with it. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today is because you posted an article, which I really enjoyed reading, at The Athletic. You guys got to check it out. It was Jim Washburn, who had some great quotes, the godfather of this wide nine alignment that we've been hearing a lot about since the 49ers hired Chris Kocurek as the defensive line coach. And there are some interesting quotes in there, and just talking about how the player in the wide nine is ideally like a freight train and on the tracks as a freight train going after the quarterback. And then he said, quote, if you have a 245 pounders, it ain't happening. When we were in Detroit, our one end was 6'5", 270, and the other was 6'6", 270. And they knocked the S out of the two tackles, and everything funneled back inside to our linebacker. So it sounds to me like D. Ford, it wouldn't actually be the ideal fit there. But at the press conference announcing the signing, John Lynch said that D. Ford was the exact fit they were looking for at Leo. Was he talking more about a sub package, Leo, and then D. Ford would be playing Sam in base? Would he be maybe not even play in base? What are we looking at here with this alignment? Because I feel like I'm more confused than ever now.
Well, so am I, and I don't think the 49ers have really settled on what they want to do, and I think they will start to kind of really hone things when the draft is all said and done. But as far as D. Ford being 245, the way I sort of reconcile it in my head is that the Leo is always on the weak side of the formation. So, you know, sometimes D. Ford will line up on the right, sometimes he'll line up on the left, but he's always lining up opposite where the inline tight end is. And that's usually the direction that a team runs the football. They run behind their tight end. So he ostensibly, there wouldn't be very many running plays in his direction. So having that 275 guy that can blow up a tight end and, you know, kind of curb a running play back to the inside, like Jim Washburn was describing, probably isn't quite as important in the 49ers defense, because he's always going to be on the weak side. Now, how will offenses sort of adjust? Will they attack D. Ford in the running game? And that's a great question. I don't know what the counter move is, but I don't think it's quite as important for D. Ford to be that 275-pound guy just because of the position that he will be playing in the 49ers version of this wide nine scheme.
More on the personnel side of this thing, but I want to first ask you about the actual defense. And if they bring in Chris Kocurek and they really want to alter how they are utilizing their front four, and that's got to affect what's happening with the linebackers. And then if the linebackers have different assignments, that's got to affect the defensive backfield. So at some point, you're not really running the Robert Sala defense. Is that like telling you that maybe they're having second thoughts about the scheme, or is just that they like this defensive line coach because he's really good at coaching up his guys to get the quarterback, and it's as simple as that?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter, and I don't know about your former question. I mean, I've been asking myself the same thing. I mean, does that kind of scuttle all these positions that we've come to memorize, the big end, the Leo, the Sam, and all that? I don't think it does. Obviously, John Lynch was using that lingo last week at the introductory press conference. I think it's mostly a sort of change in mentality that, you know, this was a team that did a lot of stunts, they call them loops or something like that. I forget what the new lingo is, but, you know, where the defensive end loops in behind a tackle and things like that. I think they're going to be doing a lot less of that, and it's just going to be at the snap, just an all-out rush to the quarterback. They're going to be very aggressive in rushing the passer, and that's the real kind of philosophical change with the wide nine, was sort of this recognition that this isn't a running league anymore. This is a passing league, and we need to disrupt the quarterback above all else. And we're basically going to play the run on the way to the quarterback. The way the wide nine has run into trouble over the years is that teams, offenses are able to take advantage of that aggressiveness. I don't know exactly how, maybe, RPOs or draws or things like that, and find the holes that are created by an aggressive front line. So that itself puts pressure on the linebackers to kind of cover more space and to cover more gaps than normal. Again, I mean, we'll have to see how this all plays out. They're definitely going to run more wide nine stuff under Kucerik. That's, you know, one of the reasons why they hired him. And they certainly were doing it at the Senior Bowl for sure. And that's the only time that they've been kind of coaching since the end of the 2018 season. So it's happening. We just haven't figured out to the extent that it's happening. And it might be that the 49ers aren't quite sure at this point either. And are kind of wait till the spring to start putting the final pieces together in their game plan.
So if Dee Ford is playing that Leo spot and he's, you know, an every down player on the line, it would seem like there's not a lot of room for another starting caliber player. Does that, do you think, impact what the 49ers are thinking about they're doing with the number two pick? Or if they did draft someone like Nick Bosa, they would, you know, plan accordingly and just change things around a little bit and move the players they do have around? And Quinnen Williams, Bosa, I think those are the, you know, consensus two guys in the draft. John Lynch has a chance to maybe play it safe and hit a double with Nick Bosa, as Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network likes to say it. Play it safe, hit a double, hit on your draft picks rather than swing for the fences with, say, DK Metcalf, Josh Allen, you know, Brian Burns, Montez Sweat, one of those guys who are supremely athletic but might not be as ready to play, might have a little more bust potential. Where are you at with the number two pick? Do you think you have a feel there? Do you think the 49ers have tipped their hands with what they've done so far in the offseason?
I think it's Nick Bosa. I think that's the guy that they're going to end up rating the highest on their board, if he isn't there already. But it does raise the question. Your initial question is where would he play? Where would he start? I mean, where he plays in nickel is obvious. It would be him and Dee Ford being the two edge rushers, and then you would have probably most of the time DeForest Buckner and Solomon Thomas as the two defensive tackles, and that's your front line in nickel situations. In base, however, you think that all the money that they're paying Eric Armstead and what he's good at, which is taking the tight end out of the play and really kind of disrupting any runs to that side of the formation, he's sort of the ideal big end, which would be sort of playing that wide nine position there. And then you start to wonder, okay, if he's the big end Dee Ford is the Leo in that situation. Where does that leave Bosa? I suppose that he could be the Sam linebacker. Eli Harold played that spot in 2017, and he was bigger than Bosa, probably less mobile than Bosa even, and they got away with it that year, it seems like. I would think that in base downs, his ideal spot would be Leo. He's a little bit bigger than Dee Ford is. He's probably better against the run. He's probably a little bit more powerful. So, maybe that those two guys alternate at Leo, and then they both play in the nickel situations, and that would get them to what, something like 65, 70, 75% of the defensive snaps over the course of the season, which is what you want anyway. So there'd be lots of ways to cobble it together, but it could be that, one of those guys isn't the quote-unquote starter in that game because he's not on the field for the first defensive snap. It'll be interesting if Bosa is the pick to see where they all line up in the spring and where they have them playing.
Yeah, and I think you said something important there about the nickel package. And in the NFL these days, sub is the new base. So I guess you've got to plan for your nickel first and then worry later about how they're going to fit in with the base defense, right? Because I'm looking at after Cassius Marsh was released soon after they signed Dee Ford, I'm trying to think of who's even in that edge meeting room right now, because the Sam, if I'm not mistaken, the Sam and the Leo guys are together and they're both considered edge positions and they have their own meeting room apart from the off-ball linebackers. Is it Dee Ford?
That's right.
Is that it?
Well, last year it was weird. I mean, it seems like the Sam is not a big position in this defense because different teams have done way different things with it. And it's a spot where you can put a guy who's not a perfect fit. But last year, they took the Sam off the field in nickel. So when they moved from base to nickel, both the nose tackle, Earl Mitchell, and the Sam linebacker, which most of the time was Mark Nzacha, although Malcolm Smith also played it, came off the field, and they sent a much more pass rush-oriented guy like Dakota Watson or Peter Taumalapenu or Ronald Blair into the game at that point. And that certainly could be what happens this year too. Let's say Nzacha is your base Sam, and in any sort of nickel situation, he comes off the field and he's replaced by Nick Bosa. It could be that if they did that every game, Bosa would end up playing 72% of the snaps, which is right around what you would want. I was looking at the Chargers' snap counts in 2000. I think it was 2017, and both Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa played all 16 games. In each of them, Ingram played 80% of the snaps that year, and Bosa played 81% of the snaps. So that's probably as many as the 49ers want their edge guys to play. And by the way, Ingram is the Leo in that defense. It's the same defense that the 49ers run. It's Gus Bradley running it in Los Angeles. And Joey Bosa is the big end. So Joey Bosa is basically the Eric Armstead in that defense in Los Angeles.
More with Matt Barrows coming up. Remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On 49ers on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On 49ers. Matt, were you surprised by how many injured players the 49ers brought in this offseason, considering the past injuries that they've had, especially last year, and how ravaged the team was, and bringing in more guys with ACL injuries? Even Dee Ford, who was healthy last year, had some back problems and wasn't able to really fully break out in his career until last year. Was that a surprising development?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I did almost for giggles say, what I would do in free agency. I cobbled together maybe half a dozen guys, but one of the parameters I was using in my mock free agency was I want to get healthy guys, because I thought the 49ers would be that way too. guys that haven't missed a lot of time due to injury, guys who aren't coming off of injuries. And, you know, C.J. Mosley was up there and several others. And the 49ers almost went in the exact opposite direction. I mean, each of these guys, aside from really Tevin Coleman, who's been very healthy, especially for a 205-pound running back over the course of his career, every one of these other guys has a significant injury history, and one of them, Quan Alexander, is coming off an ACL suffered midseason. So it's very surprising that that there would be that many injured guys, and especially this offseason when the 49ers have dedicated themselves to refurbishing their medical and training staffs in an effort to sort of figure out all the injuries that have befallen them these last 2 years. So somehow one of the most injured teams in the NFL got more injured in the off season, and I find that hard to believe. And obviously, from all the the team friendly deals that they're getting, guys who have injury histories just don't have the bargaining position that healthier guys have. So that's one of the reasons why the 49ers were able to work out so many friendly deals, but they're friendly for a reason, is my point. And I just wonder if you're falling into the Trent Baalke trap, where you feel like you're sort of gaming the system by, boy, this guy's a lot more valuable than he would have been, or we're getting him at a lower rate than he would have been if he's healthy. So we're kind of outsmarting everybody else. Well, Trent Baalke ended up outsmarting himself with that philosophy, and I just am worried that the current regime is kind of falling into the same trap.
Yeah, and Jason Verrett, probably the most injured player in the NFL over the last few years. He's played 30% of his snaps in his career, but I'm sure new trainer Dustin Little will fix all of that stuff so they won't have to worry about that. But I think that was a great point you just made about the past GMs, and John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan feel like there's a little bit of them being naive about it and reinventing the wheel. There's a reason why old grizzled GMs and old head coaches won't say anything important to the media, and these guys have been so forthcoming with you guys and in press conferences, and it's so refreshing. But I think there's a reason why, and there's a reason why they avoid red flag characters like the plague, and a reason why they avoid injured players like the plague. And I feel like the John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and this crew is kind of relearning that for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the same argument about Reuben Foster and all the red flags that were around him. And the 49ers fell into that trap of, if Reuben Foster minds his P's and Q's, then we've got a really great player that we've taken at pick number 31. Well, there's a reason why some of these teams wiped him off their boards, and those reasons became very apparent over the next 2 years. It's slow and steady wins the race, I think, when it comes to this. And you take risks like that and you try to gain ground. And I'm sure the 49ers realized that they had a lot of ground to gain when they took over this regime early in 2017. But, that pick certainly backfired, and you hope that this round of free agency isn't the same. I mean, you can see why they like Jimmy Ward, and you can see why they like Jason Verrett. They're very similar guys in that they're fearless. I mean, they're very physical. They throw their body around. They play with a certain physicality that you want. But their bodies haven't been able to kind of cash the checks that their will has done for them, and they've been injured, very injured in Verrett's case over the course of their careers. They were drafted very close to one another, and they're very similar in that. I remember Verrett being talked about as possibly a free safety. Is he a nickel cornerback? Is he a free safety? Is he an outside cornerback? And those are the conversations that people have had about Jimmy Ward as well. And now both of those guys are on the same team.
Yeah, that defensive backfield is going to be an interesting one for sure. Matt, I'd love to keep going with you, but we got to cut it off here. Always a pleasure chatting with you. You guys can find Matt on Twitter at Matt Barrows and all of his work at theathletic.com. Matt, thank you so much for the time.
No problem. Anytime, Brian. Talk to you soon.
The great Matt Barrow is always a must follow and must read when it comes to 49ers information. All right, that's going to do it for the show today. Be back Monday. And who knows what kind of news we'll be breaking over the weekend that we'll get into, but we'll probably start dipping into the mailbag once again, breaking down some more prospects, get back into the groove of the NFL draft and some prospect profiles. So hit me up on Twitter with any mailbag questions. Let me know what prospects you would like me to profile. You can hit me at BD Peacock on Twitter. And don't forget, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you're in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On 49ers.